This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs.
Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well.
Happy Hump Day, Bracketeers. This is episode number 37 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
I think Bracketeers is a really cool name for our listeners. What do you guys think?
I like
it. Yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, Rihanna has the Navy, and Beyonce has the Beehive, and Gaga has her little monsters, and I was like, you know, we could take Bracket and maybe combine it with a word like Rocketeer. Like, that's nerdy, and there we go. We have our fan base.
Wow, I didn't know any of those. I learned something new today. Yeah.
Do they not have a Beyonce and Rihanna in Montana?
I think they're around, but I've heard of, like, you know, Justin Bieber, like the Liebers. Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
I'm glad we're not doing that.
Are you implying that you're not a Belieber?
I am not a Belieber. In the Bieber.
You don't have Belieber fever?
No.
Nope. Yeah, I've been seeing his songs all over the place. Like, people who don't normally like him are like, oh my God. I'm like, no, let's not make this a thing. Let's focus on people like Adele. Like, that's what I'd like to talk about.
Yeah, I do like her.
Man. 3 million albums in a week.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Get the fuck.
It's a lot.
Right? Woman of excellence this week is Ashlyn Rose. She is a cosplayer. That's how I got to know her. And she's also the host of a new video series on Gathering Magic called MTG Breakfast, which is a little bit like a variety show and a talk show rolled into one. She has guests on the show that talk about things like finance and Vorthos and drafting and judge calls. She also participated in some of the streamer showdowns that Wizards used to have, where they would invite people with popular streams to come on and debut new sets and things like that. If you want to support Ashlyn, you can find her on Twitter at Ashlyn Rose. That is A-S-H-L-E-N-R-O-S-E. Hot topics this week. We're going to start off with an article from a previous woman of excellence, Lexi Mettler. She's been writing for Hipsters of the Coast and doing really good work for them. She wrote an article last week about Tilt, her column called Bringing to Light Types of Tilt. And she did a really nice kind of, you know, she delved into the subject of Tilt, which I always think is really fascinating. And I wish that more people talked about, because I think there's a lot more to it than, you know, you're just a sore loser or you're a bad person. And she talks about the different types of Tilt. So, for example, she talks about running bad Tilt, how when you're already kind of in the toilet and you're like 0-5 and you're like, what else could go wrong? And then, of course, everything does go wrong. And so, you know, you're feeding off of that and become even more mad. There's also the injustice Tilt, where you're like, you know, why did they get to draw a land? Why am I the one getting mana screwed? Things like that. And there's also the hate losing Tilt, which I am obviously a victim of, and that's the you just don't like losing. And she also talked about how people process Tilt differently. You know, not everybody gets mad when they tilt. Some people just kind of shut down. Other people get really flustered and they're not able to think straight. What did you guys think of this? Do you all tilt? I don't know if I've ever asked you that.
Yeah, I've talked about tilt a little bit, and I've talked about, like, the two kinds of tilt that I've seen in the wild, I guess. So I think when a lot of people think of tilt, they think of, you know, there's a gif of a guy, you know, flipping a table and getting really angry and exploding at his opponent, and I think a lot of people think that's what tilt looks like. But at least in my experience, I refer to the kind of tilting that I do as wilting, because it's more of an internal thing. Like, I get really quiet and I close down a lot and I don't really want to talk to anyone. I just sort of want to sit by myself and stew and process what happened to me. So I think tilt is a little quieter and a little more isolated than I think a lot of people think it is.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I've probably experienced all of those types of tilt at some point, but the ones that probably resonate the most with me are mistake tilt and revenge tilt. I've definitely done the mistake tilt in FNM, larger tournaments. The revenge tilt has mostly been against people that I know more locally, where I've been like, you know, this guy was like a jerk to me the last time I played him, or like, I know that I'm a better player than so-and-so, why can I never beat them? So probably those two, and then I couldn't really figure one in her article to describe the other one, but the other one is just like lack of self-worth from doing terribly and then just beating yourself up. This is why you're terrible. This is why you can't have nice things. This is why you're bad at the game. And I guess just kind of like a self-abuse type of tilt. So those are probably mine.
I think I agree with Chris that I think I've probably experienced all of these at some point or another. I think a big one that I've started seeing, not necessarily in me, but just the people I'm around while, you know, trying to grind and stuff, is entitlement tilt. Like, you play against somebody at FNM and they have a, you know, a nice homebrew deck, or it's somebody who doesn't have access to a bunch of cards or whatever the case may be, and you're playing a tier one deck and you lose to them and you're like, well, why did this $800 deck with all these Jaces and lose to this, like, you know, blue deck that has, you know, 1/1s in it, or whatever the case may be. I have started to see a lot of that, and she had a really good quote in here that said, I need to start realigning my perception of the people I'm around. And I think that's something that is good to be aware of, you know, especially for competitive players who are starting to try and work their way up the ladders. And then also the revenge tilt kind of resonated with me, because I've heard of a lot of, you know, women in particular who say, like, when I lose, it feels like I'm doing, like, a disservice to the entire gender of women. Like, you know, there's people watching, and then you lose, and it kind of reinforces, or we think it reinforces that idea in other people's heads that, you know, women aren't great at Magic or can't be competitive or whatever it is. And I've definitely felt that before. Just a big disappointment in myself when I lose, when it's like, man, I really wanted to make top 8 or something, or get a female into the top 8 or whatever it may be. I've definitely experienced the revenge tilt.
Mm-hmm. I had the worst entitlement tilt this last weekend, you guys.
Did you?
Like, the worst entitlement tilt of my life. I had some acquaintances invite me to draft with them, because one of them, I mean, this group of people, I should preface this by saying that this group of people are not drafters. They're mostly constructed brewers, but they needed like one or two more people for a draft. And so I was like, okay, I'll draft with you. Sure. And I found out that, you know, because they don't draft very often, a lot of them were almost like, as I was playing against them, they just seemed like caricatures of like all the people that, you know, like all the things that people say not to do when you're drafting.
Like, you mean the things that I do?
Well, there was well, they all seem to like overvalue certain types of cards. So there was like the overvaluing pump spells guy, the overvaluing discard spells guy, the guy who plays main deck counter spells and like threaten effects. And I systematically lost to every single one of them because I think I expect people to have the same priorities that I do when I'm drafting. Like, oh, I'm going to have a solid curve of creatures and removal, and all my cards are going to affect the board, and it's going to be great, and my mana is going to be great. And then, you know, sometimes you hit, like, bad variants, or sometimes you mulligan, or you miss a land drop, and somebody mind rots you twice in a row because they have two main deck mind rots, and you're just like, oh, I have no hand. And now I'm losing to a bunch of random tutus. Like, okay, sure. And I got really angry about it at the time. And then I had to take a step back and be like, okay, like, there were a lot of things that went wrong. Like, it was just sort of like a big confluence of bad things and bad variants happening. So don't take it too personally. It was just supposed to be a fun draft. So it's still tough.
I've totally have that before. I didn't mean to be laughing at your frustration, but I was like, this is me like multiple times. Mm-hmm.
I had the entitlement. I mean, I've had all of these variations of tilt. I've experienced them all, but I had the entitlement tilt really bad when I came back to Magic. Because I played World of Warcraft for 6 years, and I feel like there are certain elements in World of Warcraft that sort of reward you for being better. So, you know, if I'm running around with tier 13 heroic gear, which probably doesn't mean much to most of you, but some listeners might understand, I expect to heal more than somebody who's in just normal dungeon gear. And so, you know, when I would go to tournaments, I would go with my big expensive Jun deck that I spent, you know, $500 on, and I was losing to Hellriders and Falcon Wrath, no, what was the one? The one that kind of looked like Leonardo DiCaprio. It was red, it was a vampire, and every time it dealt damage, it got a counter.
Oh, Stromkirk Noble?
There we go. And so I just assumed because I paid more for this deck, and my deck was prettier and shinier, that I should beat these decks that cost like $40-$50, and that wasn't the case at all. And that was a really hard lesson to learn, because I was raised to, you know, through WoW, I was raised to think that if you have all of these great shinies, you will naturally do better than people that don't. And in Magic, that is so not the case. Mm-hmm. You know, you can lose to that really bizarre our mono green belcher deck at a modern FNM, and you're just like, what on earth? And it happens, and that's something you have to kind of remind yourself. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and I think that's something that's really just in our culture a lot. Like, yeah, you know, if you study for the test, you should do well in the test.
Yeah,
not like if you study for the test, you just fail.
Yeah,
which is kind of what Magic is like.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever told you guys the story of this, but did I ever tell you the story of my friend Amanda and the 5K? Okay, so this was the biggest experience I had, and Katie, you hit that so hard on the head. Thank you for that. You know, the feeling of I did everything right. So I went to a standard 5K back when Innistrad was standard legal, and I went with my friend Amanda and our friend Alex, and I was the good girl. I had been watching videos. I was on forums. I had a little sideboard guide folded into my deck box. You know, I got a good night's sleep. I ate a good breakfast. I did everything right. Amanda shows up at 8 in the morning. She got no sleep. She was up the entire night playing League of Legends. She was chugging the Arizona iced teas with like caffeine in them, and she ends up like top eighting it. And she's like, oh, by the way, we're taking Owen Turtenwald home because we were in top eight together because he needed a ride home. And meanwhile, I went like 4-4, and I'm like, girl. And I had that feeling. I was like, you know, I did everything right. I was the good girl. She was the one smoking in the bathroom, didn't study for the test, and yet she passed the test somehow. And I still have feelings like that, especially when I read those top eight profiles at the GP. You know, every once in a while, you'll get that one guy where they're like, you know, what did you do to prepare? And he'll be like, I played Legacy for 3 hours. And it's like, but it's a standard GP, like, you didn't even... Nope, someone just handed me a deck. And I'm like, how? Like, I practiced, and I grinded, and I read. Like, that's not fair. And like, that's the one that I suffer from the most, is feeling like I was the good girl. How could I possibly go wrong?
Yeah, and that's a tough thing about Magic. It's like, the variance is so much that, you know, even if you prepare a lot, you can still lose, and you can still lose to someone who didn't prepare as much as you, or isn't as experienced as you. I mean, there are some things like chess, for example. I have a good friend who's a woman grandmaster in chess, and I keep telling myself, like, I can't get her, I'm not going to teach her to play Magic, because she's so used to, you know, playing against people of a certain rating and saying, like, oh, I'm, you know, 23 something something, and you're 2200, and so I'm probably gonna beat you. But it just doesn't work like that in Magic.
Yeah. So how do you guys beat tilt? I mean, we've all talked about our stories, but like, how do you get past this, or how do you get out of the moment?
Doesn't really go away? I don't know. Like, I haven't experienced it lately, but I think that part of the reason why is because I just decided I'm not going to give a fuck anymore. Like, just at all. Like, I just want to play, and I feel like my mentality for why I wanted to play was in the wrong place. And now I just think about, you know, it's really not that big of a deal. It's a game I love. If I start making it seem like it's a second job, then it's not going to be fun anymore. And so I just go into everything with, like, I'm going to make the deck I want to make, the deck that I want to play. I'll tweak it. You know, I'll go to these tournaments. I'll try to prepare as best I can. And if it doesn't work out, it just wasn't my time. And I think that doing that has made me feel a lot better about losing. And I've actually been playing better because I just stopped giving any fucks, basically.
I noticed that when we were at F&M the other day. I noticed that, like, and maybe it's just the deck that you're playing, Chris, but I even told you that, like, your posture even got a little better. Like, you were really, like, kind of leaning into the board. You know, you were leaning on your one arm, and you had your hand on the other one, and you just looked so much more confident. You know, normally when you play, and I don't mean any shade by this, but you tend to kind of fold into yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you hold your cards really close to you and your arms really close to you, and you kind of tuck your legs in a little bit. And I couldn't help but notice just how differently you were carrying yourself. And I was like, I really like that side of you. So I can attest that whatever you're doing does seem to be working for you.
Yeah. I've been feeling a lot better. And I think that, you know, that was just the right move for me to do. You, in the past, when, like, I would just be like so sad, I'd be like, oh, well, maybe the next game I'll be better. No, I was wrong. It's just fucking horrible. And so I would feel like I would have to go home that night and be like, okay, let's do something that relaxes you. Let's think about, like, what you did wrong, you know, because sometimes it's not the other person. Sometimes it is, you know, but sometimes you have to take that personal reflection and be like, okay, what could I have done differently? But in the moment, I'm very bad at that because I'm very much a, like, in the moment person, focusing on the feelings that are going on, not about, like, let's rationalize the shit out of this right now. So, you know, I would have to reflect on it later. But now, I don't know, I'm just kind of like, eh, whatever. So I just don't worry about it anymore.
You've got 60 playmats, you're fine.
You're like, well, more than that now.
You have more than 60? Mm-hmm. How many do you have?
I haven't counted them yet today. Because I got
today.
Because I got a Delver playmat from Mike Linneman. He sent me in the mail from SeaTac, and then I got my Sensei's Divining Top mat, so it's probably like 60. I'm not sure.
How many?
Like 62.
So. 62.
Yeah, I'll have to double check.
Okay, so let's put this in perspective. So you have enough playmats that you could take one to F&M every week, more than a year, and have a different one every week.
Mm-hmm. Yep. At least it's not cats, Chris. That's
I know.
I told her that. I was like, you know, Chris, you got this all confused. It's like, you're supposed to die alone with 50 cats, not 50 mats. Chris is like, oh, right.
50 mats is okay. They'll be good in the wintertime.
I mean, you don't have to feed them, and they don't poop everywhere, so...
That's very true. Yeah.
That's positive, Evie.
I think putting things in perspective really helps for me. Just to give another recent example, I was playing in a league on Magic Online just before we recorded this, and I played against the four-color rally deck for, like, the second time ever. Never actually played against it on Magic Online before, but I was so excited. I was like, oh, I finally get to play against this deck. This deck seems really cool. And then I ended up losing. Well, I was in a winning position, and then I ended up losing because I attacked an Anafenza into my opponent's board, and they had a Liliana emblem out. And I did not know what Liliana's emblem actually says, but apparently it says that whenever a creature dies, and it's not a creature that the opponent controls, it's any creature, dies at your end step, you return to the battlefield under your control. So my Anafenza, they like double blocked my Anafenza and she died, and then they got my Anafenza and I proceeded to lose the game from there. And I was just like, how did I do that? That was so dumb. Like, I should have just read the emblem. And I was just like, you know what? It was just a league match. You know, this is all preparation for GP Oakland and, you know, any other big standard events that I plan on playing in, and I'm never going to make this mistake again. Like, that's it. Like, I made the mistake, it's done, I know better next time, I'm not going to do it again. And that's generally what helps me going forward.
I'm a big internalizer of tilt. Like, when I lose and I'm upset or frustrated or whatever, I get really quiet, and my face shows that I'm frustrated, and people talk to me, and I'm, like, short with them, and I'm really just not super pleasant. I mean, I don't yell at my opponent, so I guess that's something, but for me, I like to go outside. Like, a lot of times Montana's always cold, so no matter when you go outside, it's kind of refreshing. And getting out from under the lights in a Magic tournament always helps me, like, I feel like no matter where you're at, the lights always bug me in magic. Like, in a big tournament hall, sometimes they're like those weird fluorescent lights, or there's like always one flickering off in the corner. Or we were at this doubleheader PPTQ, we were in like the basement of this hotel, and the lights were just like, I couldn't tell what time of day it was, there was no windows, and I was like, I just gotta be outside away from this. And so I like to go outside. I do like to vent, like, three sentences to my testing partners. Like, this happened, I'm really frustrated. Like, I'm really frustrated. And then sometimes, if I say I'm frustrated, like, six times or something, then I'm like, okay, I'm done being frustrated. Like, I've definitely worn in that sentence. And so, I don't know, just vocalizing, like, I am frustrated that this happened. Like, I am frustrated that this happened. I don't need to say it, like, in a row, you know, but I feel like in the course of a conversation, Brooke and Kobe probably hear that like 6 to 10 times. And then I'm like, okay, not frustrated anymore. Got it out of my system. And that's just, I mean, I tilt a lot less than I used to. I feel like I'm really good at just being like, well, that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. But when I do get frustrated, going outside, stating that I'm frustrated and telling my friends what happened, like, succinctly, but not drawing it out too much is how I get over tilt.
Yeah. I agree with, I think it might have been, you know, Katie or Chris who said this, the fact that you never really get over it. You know, like, I've come a long way, but I do still have my, you know, I had a moment at the past, there was we had a standard 5K a couple weeks ago, and I'll admit I totally fell off the wagon, and somebody on Twitter called me on it, and, you know, I don't think I'll ever be completely, you know, free of it. You know, I think it's always a problem that I'm going to have. I do think that I've gotten much better, and I'm continuing to get better at it, and I appreciate people who kind of understand. You know, I don't expect people to, I mean, if I've been shitty to someone, they have every right to not accept my apology and to not, you know, just fuck with me anymore. And that's totally fine. You know, but I do appreciate people that are like, you know what, this doesn't define you. You know, we know that you're trying, and they let me do that. Because, you know, the one misconception I kind of want to clear up is that tilting is never fun. You know, like, I'm the tilter where, unfortunately, I lash out at people. And people think that when it's happening, you're enjoying it. Or it's like, oh, you wanted to tell that person off. Or you wanted to. When it's happening, you're so busy seeing red that you don't think of things like that. So in the moment, you want to burn it all down. You give no fucks. But when it's over with, it never feels good. Like, I have never tilted on someone and looked back on it and thought, that felt good. It's always felt terrible. And then comes the guilt. And then comes the shame. And then comes the, what about my reputation? What about, you know, what if I lose listeners over this? And so, you know, I feel like I deal more with the after than I do the during. Like, you know, when it's all over, it's just like, oh God, did I say that? Did I do that? You know, and it's a really terrible feeling. And so, you know, you do sometimes see people where they're like, oh, he's just a hothead or she's just terrible. You know, that's not fun. Like, we're not having fun when we do that, you know? It's actually a really terrible feeling. And I, like I said, there's just so much to this topic, and I'm really glad that we're talking about it. This past weekend was the SCG Open, and it was in, oh God, where was it?
New Jersey.
Jersey. Oh my God. Jersey.
Oh my God.
My God. Little Mama Santa coming out there. But there was a bit of a kerfuffle at the event, and specifically it had to do with a feature match, and Owen Turtenwald, I guess, happened to be watching a feature match, and there was a young man on the stream that had a miscut card, and I mean, like, egregiously miscut. I'm looking at a picture now, and I sent it to you guys. It almost looks like two different cards. Like, it looks like half of a dual land and, like, half of a, maybe an artifact or a white card.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like half a Bayou and half of something unintelligible. I don't know.
Right. And he had it with his lands. I'm going to assume that he was using a land. But, you know, Owen was outraged and said, you know, how is this possible? Like, this is really bad for coverage. And it seemed like the majority of people on Twitter agreed with him. You know, Katie, from a judge's perspective, you know, how do you handle this? Like, how do you know what card this is? And how do you kind of keep people from going, oh, well, in this match, I want it to be a Bayou. In this match, I want it to be mystery artifact card. Like, how do you handle that?
So I did some digging into the rules, and, you know, because alters come up a lot. Like, can I use this alter? Can I not? And what the Magic Tournament rules say is that the card has to be genuine and published by WotC. It has to have a standard Magic back or be a double-faced card. It cannot have squared corners. It must have black or white borders. It's not a token. It's not damaged or modified in any way that might make it marked, and it's otherwise legal, defined by the format. And then later in the section, it says that players may use otherwise legal, non-English, and or misprinted cards, provided they are not using them to create an advantage by using misleading text or pictures. And then it has, like, promotional textless spells are always allowed as well. Mm-hmm. So there's not really, it's not a ton of coverage in the rules stating what can and can't be used. The head judge does have the ability to say you are or are not allowed to use that card. But I think if the card is causing, if it's misprint enough where it's causing confusion which card it is, I think that's probably a pretty good, you know, line in the sand. Like, probably shouldn't be using that card. And I think it was kind of clear that he was using a land. I can see where Owen's coming from, where it is confusing to watch and probably was not the best for coverage. But I hope that they come out with a, you know, kind of stricter guideline that we can follow about that, because there's nothing really hard and fast in the rules about what to do.
So if he were, if this young man was filling out a deck list, he would basically say, like, he would have to declare what that card is on the deck list. So he would have to say, this is a bayou. And then mm-hmm. if he tries to use it as anything else, he could get in trouble for that, right?
Yes. That's, okay. That's bad.
Okay. And Hallie and Katie and Chris, do you agree that this is bad for coverage or just bad for the game in general? Like, what did you think when you saw this?
I didn't even know that it was possible to do this. I had never seen a card that was that severely miscut before, and I had certainly never seen one on coverage. I wasn't watching at the time that this happened, so I can only react in hindsight, but I imagine if I had been watching, it would have been very confusing, and I know a lot of reforms have been made to coverage so that things can be clearer, like, you know, players who typically played with their lands in front now have to play with their lands in back. And, you know, the board is sort of standardized so that every time you look at a game, you know exactly what's happening. And I think it certainly is bad for coverage in the sense that you can look at the board and not know what card it is or not know what mana the player has available. I think it's really unclear both to viewers and to the opponent also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I also didn't see it live, but I saw, like, enough pictures of it, and I was like, well, if I was the opponent, I think I'd be annoyed by it, because I'd be like, really, man? Like, really? Okay. But that would just be me. I do agree that for coverage, yeah. I think it's not very clear, because I know they've said before they want Magic to reach, like, a larger audience. They want it to be something where people can tune into coverage and they can watch and, like, understand what's going on. And especially with a format like Legacy, for someone that's like, okay, I want to see what this Legacy business is all about, that might be a little confusing to them or misleading to them. So I can definitely agree that for coverage, it probably was not the best matched feature because of that.
Yeah. I thought it was shopped at first. Like, when I first saw it, I thought it was just kind of Owen being Owen, because, you know, he does like to kind of stir the pot a little bit, God bless him, and I thought maybe it might have been, you know, there was some Photoshop involved, or there was some sort of whatever, and when I saw the responses, I was like, oh, this really happened. Like, and the miscuts that I've always seen were, like, really minor, where people are like, you know, the second A is technically on an angle, and the art is blah, blah, and it's just like, you know, really little things. You know, this was the first time I'd ever seen, like, a big fuck-off miscut like this, where I was like, what? So that was kind of shocking to me. Mishra's Photoshop is a Twitter account that we all know and love, and he takes popular people in Magic and Photoshops them into funny situations, and I really love what he does. And he's also been an advocate for Magic Online, and he has these really lengthy discussions with Lee Sharp about how to make Magic Online better. And so Channel Fireball decided to give Mishra a platform to put down all of his thoughts, because it can be really hard to do on Twitter. And so he wrote this post called 8 Steps to Fix MTGO Events. And I'm just going to go ahead and name a couple of them that could affect us. So one of the things that he suggests is to create 2 entry options for each league. And I know that, Hallie, you tend to prefer the leagues mm-hmm. over the dailies. And one of the things that Mishra suggests is that you have a friendly league and a competitive league. Because as it stands right now, the prize support is not great on a competitive level. And that might deter people from wanting to play the leagues for competitive reasons. And so this way you have a friendly league that has, you know, good prize support, and then, you know, the competitive one that really does reward you for doing a good job in the league. The other thing he suggests is to get rid of daily events. And I'm somebody who, you know, Hallie likes her leagues. I'm more of a daily event girl. So it's taking me a while to get used to leagues. Misha is basically just saying to get rid of them, that, you know, you have leagues now, you know, leagues are better prize support for what you're paying to get into them. And the daily events are just not firing anymore. So we should just kind of scrap them all together. And the last thing that he suggested that really spoke to me was he talked about bringing back premier events. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but they used to have these events happen on the weekends that were like 5 or 6 rounds, cut to top 8, really good prizes, and they don't have those anymore. And to me, those were almost like PPTQs in terms of skill level, where like I would do those before a GP, and I would feel like I was really practicing. So Hallie, what do you think about these changes? Like, do you think that he has a point here?
Yeah, I think he made a lot of good points. I read through all 8 of the points that he made, and I either strongly agreed with them or, you know, they didn't apply to me, so I didn't have an opinion. So I thought that all the changes that he suggested were good. I definitely like the suggestion to reintroduce the premier events. I never got to play them because I've only been playing Constructed on Magic Online for a couple months now. But I think a lot of people go to Magic Online for tournament preparation, like preparing for Grand Prix and things like that. And having a large event that will simulate that on Magic Online that's accessible from your home is a great resource.
Yeah.
Some other things I really liked that he said were moving the pre-releases up a couple days, because like Mishra, I also don't like that the pre-releases on Magic Online are 2 full weeks after the pre-releases in paper. Like, I totally understand that they're trying to give people an opportunity to go to their game store and give their game stores an opportunity to reach their audiences and everything, but that long a gap, especially when you're preparing for a Pro Tour or preparing for another large upcoming GP, like, so soon after a set releases, it just doesn't give you enough time to practice. So I like that. The league prize structure thing, I sort of agree with that. I haven't been playing leagues long enough to have very strong opinions about the prize structure. The one thing I dislike about leagues is that players aren't paired against players with the same record as them, and I don't understand like why that is or what can be done to fix that, but it's something that I personally don't like about it. And yeah, just all the things that he said, you know, more cube and flashback drafts, just everything was great.
Yeah. Katie and Chris, I know that you two have talked about sort of dipping your toe into Magic Online. Chris, you said you just got your modern deck on Modo?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I know, Katie, you said that there's sort of a lack of events near you, so you may start streaming again.
Yes.
So what events appeal to you all? Like, do you think that you may play the leagues? Do you think you might just sort of, you know, cycle through drafts and kind of go infinite? Like, what do you think you might do?
I don't even know. Like, I mean, well, because, like, the first time I actually got on to, like, play was last night. Like, I literally had Nick be like, need to click this, and the shortcut's that. And I was like, okay, well, why is there this clock that is, why do I not have all this time? I'm like, that's one of my 3 games? I'm like, that's freaking ridiculous. And, like, he was like, you want to go to this one and click on this, and play for free this way, and I was like, oh, okay. So I just did a couple matches, and I want to use it as an opportunity to become even more competent with my deck. Like, I know what I'm doing, I know what I want to do with Mono Blue Tron, but I think the clock thing is good for me just to play faster. Not that I don't already play it faster, but to be like, okay, yes, we're playing this, da 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 da, and maybe get some more experience against some other decks that I haven't really played against. Like, I don't know what the heck this guy was on last night, but it was like Pyromancer's Ascension or some crazy thing.
Oh, that's Storm.
It was Storm, okay. Yeah. That's what I thought, I think I've maybe played against Storm once, like, last year, like, when I didn't know what Modern was, and I just had this deck, and I was like, apparently I'm dead.
Welcome to Modern.
And I was like, okay. But I was like, okay. So, I don't know. I would be up for, you know, pretty much, I guess, anything, you know, once I kind of figure out what the heck I'm doing a little better. But I think it could become addicting, and that might be a problem.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, Modo intimidates me a lot. Like, Erin sent us an email saying that she's going to give each of us a little, like, some tickets or something. And I was like, I don't even know how to get that. I don't even know how to contact her on Modo. Like, that seems scary and difficult. I've got Facebook down, Skype, Twitter, but Modo is, like, a whole other beast. And then, you know, my friend Kobe was like, you're more than welcome to borrow my Modern deck if you ever want to test some Modern online. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. I have no idea how to do that. Like, how do I get your cards to my account? Or maybe I should just log in under your account, because I have no idea. But it seems like there's a lot of mystery involved that I have no idea what to do yet. But I'm planning on doing drafts, because I know that you just click on the draft button, and then, like, everything works like it's supposed to.
Basically.
So I'm hoping to do a lot of drafts. The one thing I did agree with, you know, I couldn't take a lot from this because I don't know a ton about Modo, but I did like the moving the pre-release and release up, because I was thinking about streaming around Battle for Zendikar time, and then it was like once it came out on Modo, I was like, oh, it's already kind of old, and I don't know if I want to do sealed. And maybe that's just an excuse, but I do agree that the lag time there is a little long.
Yeah, I also think streaming, it seems like the streamers that enjoy Sealed tend to do better. Like, it feels like they have more viewers and more of a following. Like, people really like seeing what people like, you know, Gabby and Kenji, what they can draft and what they can build. So I think if you're thinking about getting into streaming, Katie, I think that you'd be really good at that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
If I don't misclick. the one time I did stream, I played an 80-card deck. So.
I remember. But people like punts. You know, they usually have, like, a punt counter or something, and that can be entertaining as well.
Yeah, mine's, like, over 9,000, so.
Oh, man. Yeah, you guys will have to get more competent with Modo, because one of the things that we're thinking of offering with our Patreon is that our listeners can come draft with us, and, you know, we don't want to invite them into a call and be like, you know, you're here to draft, and then we're just like... Oh, crap, she missed the cue. Oh, wait, we got to wait for her. And then, like, you know, and then you're just sort of auto-picking because you're taking too long. Like, that could be a disaster.
It could be. Maybe they'd like that. They'd win. I'd be over here with my 80-card deck.
How can you beat those odds, right?
Exactly.
Mark Rosewater answered a question on his Tumblr called Blogatog about the gender-neutral pronouns, which has been a hot topic lately. I saw a petition going around recently that was asking Wizards to not only consider changing the pronouns in future cards, but to go back and revise the Oracle text for older cards, the cards that say he or she. People would like them to just say they. And somebody decided to ask Mauro, you know, what he thinks about this, and says, why do you continue to use he or she when referring to a player when they is correct, unambiguous, and more inclusive? And I thought Mauro handled this well. He tackled each of these points quite nicely. And, you know, some of the things that he said was, you know, the editing is very complex, and that one of the things they use is called the Chicago Manual of Style, and that if you're going to follow this guide, you can't just sort of pick and choose. Like, you're either following it or you're not. And that these style guides, you know, certainly evolve, but as of right now, this is what they're kind of going with. He also mentions the fact that the word they can mean two different things, that it can mean a singular they, like one person, or it could also mean many players, and that when you're making a game, the number one thing you have to think about is being clear. Like, people have to know what the cards do, and the last thing you want to do is add something else that could confuse them. You know, you see some cards with, like, walls of text, you know, and then you want to add they on top of it. That could just maybe be too much. And the last thing he says is that they've been working really hard to make the game more inclusive to women, and so if you take away he or she, you know, you take away the female pronoun and just say they, you know, he's concerned that that may, you know, imply that they're not looking to do that, that they're not looking to, you know, incorporate more women into the game. Hallie, what did you think about this? So I know we talked last night, and it seemed like you had a really good response.
Yeah, I thought Mauro's points were very well articulated, especially the point about women. I found that very reassuring. I think... The response that I have to this is that, you know, as much as I would like for there to be a widely accepted gender-neutral pronoun in the English language that is also grammatically correct, there isn't. Our language definitely has limitations. A lot of languages have limitations. And until there is a gender-neutral pronoun that we can all agree on and that is considered as grammatically correct as he and she, I don't think we're going to have that. The unfortunate thing is that, by and large, our culture still sees gender as a binary, and our language is a reflection of that. And I think, hopefully, as our culture changes, maybe our language will change with it, but it remains to be seen.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, too. When I read his response, I also thought that he addressed everything very well, and I agreed with him with his points. And I do think, you know, if they did take she out, yeah, there are some people that would isolate. Now, I can't put myself in a position of someone that identifies differently than me, so I can't say how that might feel to someone else. But we've gotten to the point that at least people are addressing the fact that, yes, women play this game. People that identify as being women play this game. You know, and like Hallie said, maybe when language does evolve to a point that we can include everyone in that, that would be awesome. But at least Wizards of the Coast does not appear to be saying that they don't care, that they're not interested in people's feelings. Obviously, they are by addressing the situation. And I do agree with Mauro by saying that, you know, not everything is always as simple as you always think it is. Like, there isn't always, like, a simple, quick fix to try to, you know, make a situation a little easier. So I appreciate that he broke everything down, you know, respectfully and, you know, concisely to explain, you know, why things are the way they are. So I could definitely appreciate that from him.
Yeah, and I really like that it sounded like, you know, even though his response is current, it sounds like something they've already discussed probably at length.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that that came across in the post, because it wasn't like a, I'm just making this up as we go along, but it's like, yes, 20 years ago, we were kind of thinking about that. So I enjoyed his response. I'm in the same boat as Chris, where I can only speak to, like, how I feel, but I think for now, until we find a word, he or she is kind of going to have to suffice.
I also want to, before we get into our listener question, I just want to say we also got the opportunity to hang out with Mrs. Mulligan this past weekend on her Road to 1000 stream.
Yes.
She managed. We did give you a shout out, Katie.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, we talked about how you were saving all the aminals.
Yeah.
I did save some aminals.
Yeah, because people were like, where's Katie? And it's like, she's busy doing God's work. She's saving animals. She's you know, busy saving cats from turkey carcasses, and she's giving bears root canals. And
all that stuff.
Did you see that we even got a listener question that was just for you?
No.
Oh, I have to forward you that. Yeah, it's literally about animals playing magic. Swear to God.
Oh, my God. That sounds right up my alley.
But anyways, we got to hang out with Mrs. Mulligan and her husband, and we had a really good time. There was some technical difficulties on my end, so I wasn't able to join the call right away. But Hallie and Chris, did you have a good time hanging out with her and her listeners?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, she's really good people, and I can't really say enough about her. So if you're not following her or subscribing to her, you need to fix that ASAP, because she's doing good work, and she just has such a really positive attitude. You know, you can't help but enjoy watching her.
Mm-hmm. And so how exactly did it work? Were you guys, like, Skyped in, or did you have, like, little, you know, webcams on, or...
So she had a Google Hangout. So she was on Twitch. So she was broadcasting through Twitch, and then she had a Google Hangout, and she gave us all a link, and then we each clicked the link, and then we were brought into the Hangout, and then, you know, it was sort of like the normal Google Hangout layout, where it's like, you know, in the right-hand corner, there were the little boxes, and depending on who was talking, your box would sort of blow up or magnify. And then we were able to watch the Twitch chat, and we were able to interact on Twitch, and it was pretty seamless, like, once we got it figured out.
Nice. That sounds fun.
Yeah, so it's definitely something we've thought about doing. Again, one of our Patreon rewards, we thought about doing like a joint stream where we all get together and, you know, have one of us pilot a deck and the rest of us sort of backseat pilot. And I think it's something we could totally do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Our listener question this week, send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. This one is a two-part question, but I thought that both the questions were really good and like they were things we've never really talked about, so I figured why not answer them. This letter comes to us from Hannah, and Hannah says, "Hey, Girlfriend Bracket, I am a freshman college student. I first played Magic in sixth grade and stopped that year as the teacher who ran the Magic Club asked me if the reason why I was playing was to impress a boy."
Girl.
Young man. "However, I continued to get cards and just never left my house to play." Oh. In coming to college, I've started to play Magic a lot more, specifically EDH, and found a nice niche in my college's Saturday night Magic event. I've totally fallen in love with Magic and want to start playing a different format, specifically Modern. I'm working on a blue-green Infect deck. We'll tackle that later. However, I still feel uncomfortable going to my local game store because of my age and gender. I went to my first pre-release for Battle for Zendikar and felt really intimidated by the environment as I was one of two women in a group of roughly 30 people and I was definitely the youngest. I also noticed I was being treated differently by some of the other people that I played against. I'm not exactly sure if this will get better and if there are any ways I can make the space more comfortable for myself. So that's question number one. Number two, in making my first Modern deck, I've looked at a lot of deck lists online, and one of my friends has given me a lot of shit about playing with somebody else's deck list, and I don't know how to respond. I recognize I don't have the most knowledge of every single card, and I don't understand the meta. I don't want to play to lose, but it makes me feel really shitty when my friend gives me shit for net decking. Thank you so much for making an awesome podcast. So number one, how can she make the space more comfortable? And two, how do you deal with friends who don't like that you net deck?
I think, first of all, about the space being uncomfortable, I think it's a shame that she feels uncomfortable there, and I don't think it's a store patron's responsibility to make a space comfortable for themselves. I think that's the responsibility of the store owner, the tournament organizer, the judge, and the community surrounding that store. So I think, you know, if she does have concerns about the player base there, I think talking to that figure in the store, that store owner, judge, tournament organizer, what have you, and addressing her concerns to that person might be a good place to start. But if the community is toxic and if she doesn't feel comfortable there, then it might be time to just find another store, unfortunately. So the second question, I would say that not everyone is a brewer. I'm definitely not a brewer. I've net decked quite a bit. And I agree that if you're wandering into a new format and you don't know what the meta is like, you don't know what sorts of cards are played, it's really hard to just brew up a deck and expect to do well. So I think getting your feet wet with an established deck is a pretty good place to start. And once you have a better idea of what the metagame is like, then you can sort of start tweaking your deck or maybe building a deck of your own. So I don't really know what to say to her friend. I mean, I definitely have had this conversation with people that I know who are brewers, and I guess all I really say to them is, look, you like to brew, that's great. That's not really my thing. Everyone has different strengths when it comes to Magic. I'm not a brewer, and so, you know, if this is a deck that works for me, this is a deck that I like, I'm going to play it. And maybe I'll win, and maybe I won't, but in any case, that's just how I go about playing the game, and I don't think she should feel bad about playing the game that way too.
Yeah, I think for making the space more comfortable, she says that she found a nice niche in her college's Saturday night Magic event, and I'm wondering if that's the same as her local game store or if that's like a club on campus. Because then she says, I still feel uncomfortable going to my LGS by myself because of my age and gender. So, you know, if she has fun on her campus club or whatever, then I think, you know, maybe just playing there. You don't have to go to the LGS. But if they are the same thing, sometimes you can get a friend to go with you. Even if they don't play Magic, just be like, hey, you want to come hang out for a night? I'm playing this cool card game. You know, I could teach you how to play if you want, or, you know, we can just talk in between rounds, or whatever it is. I think having just one other person there with you can make it, you know, a lot more comfortable for you, and then, you know, maybe other people will start to warm up to you, or, you know, sometimes it's just awkward going into a place by yourself and being like, hi, I'm new, who wants to be friends? Like, that can just, you know, be an awkward situation. And I think with one other person there as a buffer, sometimes that can make it a little bit more comfortable. With the net decking, I think that Infect is a really good Modern starting deck, because while the deck has a lot of play to it and can be very in-depth and have a lot of decisions, it can also just be like a straightforward, like, I don't know what you're doing, but this is what I'm doing, and I might win. And so I think that's a really good starter deck for somebody getting into Modern. It's also relatively inexpensive, so that's always a plus. And the person who's giving you shit, I feel like you know, you say it in your email, and I think you should just say it to them. You don't have the most knowledge at this point, and you don't understand the meta, and this is a good deck to be able to understand the meta, and, you know, whether or not you want to brew, I think it's a good place to start. If you just tell them straight up, like, hey, I don't know everything about Modern, so yeah, I'm going to copy this deck because somebody's doing well with it, and I want to do well. You know, I think that that's just a good place to start, is communicating that it doesn't make you feel great when they're always teasing you about something. Because teasing about something that you don't like, you know, turns from joking into being mean pretty quickly.
I definitely agree with everything that Hallie and Katie have said. Those are all awesome suggestions, and hopefully will have given her a wealth of things to think about. I do agree with Katie that if the if this is possibly a college club that she plays EDH at, that, you know, yes, maybe taking someone else with her, like another friend on campus, might be fun, especially if she has, like, maybe, you know, some pre-constructed, like, EDH decks, you know, teach them how to play and maybe have them go with. And then maybe that's just the place where, you know, she can be more casual. If she goes to her LGS for, like, FNM and she wants to be a little more competitive, or she wants to, like, learn the meta for Modern or Standard or what have you, you know, that would be a good place to do it. Might be good to bring a friend with if you want to. Me, personally, I'm not worried about driving 2 hours and meeting total strangers, but that's just me. And just gravitate to people in, you know, your local game store that seem, like, open and welcoming and nice. You know, they don't have to be your BFF right out of the gate, but, you know, just kind of start talking to people every week, and then things like that kind of just form organically. Like, the person that you didn't know before might be, like, your awesome best bud, like, 6 months later. Things like that just happen. And if there's people there that are just rude or, you know, disrespectful to you, definitely let the owner of the game store know. Just kind of avoid them, stay away from them. Don't let, you know, just one jerk in the place, like, ruin the whole thing for you, especially if it's the closest place by you or you like other people that go there. For the second part of the question, I agree with Katie on playing the infect deck seems like a good idea. In regard to the net decking, there's nothing wrong with net decking. When I first started playing, I thought I didn't want a net deck, and I was wrong. Because at the time, I wanted to be more competitive. I wanted, you know, to be able to hang with these other decks, but I was just going about it the wrong way. I really needed to have a good starting place, be like, okay, this is something that's tried and true that other people have used, and it works. And if I want to tinker with it from there, then it's fine. And I think if you're starting out in the format and you don't really know what you're doing, then that's perfectly fine. You can change the deck if you want to and make it more yours later on. Or, you know, maybe you don't like the deck. Maybe you want to play something else. But you have to have a starting place first. And I would hope that your friend would be supportive in that and be like, hey, this is how you're going to go about doing that. I'll be there for you. I'll help you test, whatever. And, you know, just tell them, hey, you know, I really do want to get into this game, but you're making me feel bad for how I'm trying to get into it. You know, I just want to have fun like you are. So I would say, you know, if you want to, you know, brew something later, cool, but try to become more acclimated with everything before you kind of dive in head first, and maybe that would end up being a bad time. So good luck to you.
Regarding the local game store, I actually have different advice. I think that she should kind of like how I talked about, you know, how I'm just, you know, we talked about the preaching to the choir and how people ask, you know, how come we don't tailor our show towards, you know, people who don't agree with us and things like that. And I talked about how you should just kind of cultivate your own space. And if people were ready, they could sort of come to you. That would kind of be my advice, because my concern is, especially when you're dealing with like dudes and competitive dudes, you don't want to seem like you're trying too hard. Like, you don't want to be like, hey guys, I brought brownies, or hey guys, you know, what are you guys talking about? You know, trying to ingratiate yourself, because I worry that you may look like you're trying too hard, or they may even be like, what is this girl's issue? But I think what you can do, instead of putting yourself constantly out there and maybe getting nothing in return, just making sure that your space is in good shape. You know, as long as you're playing good, clean Magic and you're friendly to your opponents and you're doing your part, you know, I think you know, kind of letting people clue in to how great you are. You know, instead of trying to convince people, like, look, guys, I'm really good. I'm really funny. I want to be my friend. Let them kind of find out for themselves. Like, let them be like, oh, I played a really great match against her, and she was really fair, and maybe she explained what my car did, or maybe she, you know, she called a judge, and she wanted to make sure everything was being done right. You know, just sort of making sure that your space is in good shape. And if they decide, hey, we don't know enough about this girl, or hey, we had a lot of fun playing this girl, you know, you're there, and you're doing everything right, and they can sort of come to you. Like, I think that would be the approach that I would take, because I've certainly tried to do the opposite. I've been the one that's been really persistent and trying really hard, and that makes me feel worse when I'm going, oh, but I was so funny, and oh, I wore this really cool t-shirt, and nobody noticed. Just sort of kind of like you said, to kind of like how you described Infect, Katie, of, you know, this is my plan, and I'm going to do this, and you're either on board or you're not. You know, just sort of being kind of quietly awesome, and I think that's the approach that I would suggest. In terms of net decking, I don't really understand the hatred that net decking has. If anything, I think the only thing I don't like when it comes to net decking is people who don't even try to understand why the cards are in that list. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the things I love to do, and maybe I'm just a jerk, but, you know, I'll see people that sideboard in certain cards, and I'll be like, so, what do you bring that in for? And you'd be surprised how many times you get like, I don't know. And I'm like, so do you know, like, why? It's like, what does it work well with? Like, what's it for? And they're like, I don't know that either. And that drives me nuts. I think if you're going to net deck, I think it's really important to try to understand why the list is what it is. Like, why the cards are there, why the quantity of said card is there. You know, why are there only three Abzan Charms instead of four? Why do you have two Transgress the Minds instead of two Duress or two Despise? You know, I really respect people who can net deck and show that they want to know more. I only really have a problem with net decking when people have no interest in that, where they're like, oh, well, Jerry T told me to play this. But do you know why?
No.
Do you want to know why? Mm-mm. It's like, well, at that point, I can't really be bothered with you. You know, but if you're somebody who's not afraid to, you know, make the deck yours, make some tweaks, make some changes, you know, really understand where the deck came from, then I have no problem with net decking. And I think your friend's just, you know, being kind of shitty, and you should tell them that.
Yeah.
Final thoughts before we wrap up the show? Well, I have something. I found out the other day that I qualify for a Star City Games Invitational.
Yay!
Wow!
I got an email from Jared Silva, and he was like, hey girl, are we going to see you in Vegas? And I'm like, I don't qualify. Like, why would I be in Vegas? And he's like, yeah, you do. You've earned yourself a seat. And I was like, no, you don't understand. I don't qualify for things. I was like, on my show, we have two people who are great at the game. That's their, I'm just the mouth. I'm the entertainment. I don't qualify for things. And he's like, no, you really do. And I'm like, this can't be right. So I'm pressing the issue. And he's like, yeah, you actually earned enough open points since 2014. And my top eight at States pushed me over the threshold. And so I can either choose to go to Vegas, which I'm not going to be able to do, or I can choose to attend one of the three invitationals next year. And I guess I'm going to an invitational.
Yay!
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah, so I guess I have to start paying attention to Standard more, because they're not Legacy. They're all Standard and Modern. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, hell. I guess I gotta stick with Standard. So yeah, I gotta figure out, you know, which one I want to go to, depending on what the Standard scene is like, and that'll be a neat story for the podcast.
Sweet,
nice.
Yeah, there's also a possibility that I'll be able to play in the Invitational, the TCG, this weekend. Still not really clear on that. I have built Alianzrazi's four color dragons deck. I also played your Naya dragons deck, Katie, and I really, really liked it.
Cool.
Thank you very much for giving me that, because I was getting really bored with green-red ramp. So I'm actually having fun playing Standard. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
Right? So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, where can they find us and how can they get a hold of us?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalcanSan. That's HalcanSan. You can read my Tumblr, magicandrealism.tumblr.com, and you can read the rest of my writing here on Gathering Magic.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger, that's MeanMugger, or by email, katie.neal14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is THKRIZ, that's DeChris. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ@gmail.com, yo to Chris. And my Snapchat is Cryptic Command, spelled with K's. Been getting some awesome pics. Love all you guys.
Did Katie send hers?
Yeah, she did.
What did she send you? I'm so curious.
She sent me a picture of Groot. You have a Groot, like, standee?
Yeah, I have a life-size Groot standee that's in my room. It's behind my computer chair, and he wears my hats.
Oh, wow. Awesome. That would creep me out on, like, a rainy night, like, the silhouette of it. Like, there'd just be the shadow of, like, this big tree monster. Like, oh, my goodness.
There was this time where I was, like, vacuuming, and I went to move the Groot, and it, like, kind of fell on top of me and over the bed. And Watson went berserk, and he was, like, barking, and he, like, grabbed its cardboard leg and was, like, dragging it off me, and he was like, ah! And I was like, Watson, it's okay. We like Groot. He's on our team. And he was, like, not having it. He thought I was getting, like, mauled down.
Oh, my God.
That is the greatest mental picture ever. I'm just imagining little Watson dragging this giant cutout through your apartment. That's great.
Yeah, he's, like, 9 feet tall or something.
Wow. And Watson, just no fear.
No fear.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That is OriginalOestrus. You can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket, and you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. I just spaced. Katie, did you give your information?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I could have sworn you didn't. I was just like, oh, God, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Man. It's been a bad day. Anyways, thank you all so much for listening, and we will catch you next week. Bye-bye.